Hello, everybody. Steve Lacy here. Welcome to episode 7 of Binge Talking. Wow, this is taking off. All right, I wanted to take a moment to let you guys know if you like listening to my podcast, I am not alone. We have a number of other great podcasts that all fall under the umbrella of the Fox 5 Podcast Network as well. Podcasts like The Tape Room with Dan Bowens. This is one of my favorites. He basically goes through our tape room, which is an actual physical part of this building up on the fifth floor, goes through the archives, and does these really well-crafted, like, 10-15-minute reports on true crime stories, stretching back 10, 20, 30 years. Really interesting stuff. Really well done. We've also got Morris on Money. This, of course, is the one and only Ally Moe. She's all business, and she's got great guests that will help deal with the economy and hopefully make a buck or two in the process. She's really clued into that world. Our political reporter, Joe Tuohy, he has a weekly podcast called Politics Unusual. And certainly that is a fitting title for the times we are living in right now. He has a really great take on things. He used to work at Meet the Press. He knows what he's talking about. We're lucky to have him here, so you can check out his podcast, Politics Unusual, Joe Tuohy. And for your inner nerd, check Another Think Coming with Matt King. Tech, science, space, all that sort of stuff. And, of course, Binge Talking here, rounding out our glorious five-member deep podcast network with our bro Matt Onimus, who's in here for all of those shows. So check out the Fox 5 Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts. You can search Fox 5 Podcast in iTunes. You get the whole network of shows. You can also find us on Google Play and Stitcher, whatever that is. All right, check it out now. Please rate and review, subscribe, all that stuff. But in the meantime... Episode 7 now on to my... someone who's become a friend of mine, who I met through social media. An insanely talented sculptor. Artist, an all-around artist. This guy, like, really lives the artist lifestyle in the best possible way. Jim McKenzie.
From New York City, USA, welcome to the Fox 5 Podcast Network.
Welcome to Binge Talking. Guns N' Roses is out of New York City now, so I'm a little bit low, but we'll get through it. One of the fascinating things about doing TV is you don't really have any way of knowing who's on the other end of the screen. I was having this conversation with someone the other day about when I was an anchor in Bangor, where there literally, thankfully, were probably only like 10 people watching, thankfully, because I was so awful at TV. The experience itself is really no different than being in New York City with however many people watching. You're in a room with a camera, with a piece of glass, which is the teleprompter over the camera, with the word scanning, and probably you've got a man or a woman standing by the camera telling you which camera to look at. So the advent of social media, which I only got involved in really when I moved to New York 6 years ago, has been fascinating for me because it's allowed me to get a much better idea of who is out there watching what's on the news and watching my show. And one of the cooler people I've interacted with since the advent of social media and when I moved to New York was Jim McKenzie, who is an artist, a local guy. He's a local guy. And he joins me now. Jim, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I'm trying to think. The origin, I feel like, of our relationship was Instagram. Like, did you follow me and I followed you or something? Do you even remember?
I think so. I was following you, like, in person, like, when you were going home in a cab.
Oh, and right, right. That was you.
I'm gonna hit him up, yeah.
I was like, I've got my first stalker in New York. I'm really making it. Mama's is excited.
But I think you... I was following you for a bit, and then... you said something about like screen printing. You wanted to find a place to do screen printing.
Oh, I messaged you. That's right. Because I'm like, and then I followed you back, and I'm like, oh, this guy's cool. Like, you know, he's like a real deal artist and everything. Right. And oh, that's right. You messaged me. That was a couple years ago. Correct. Yeah. Okay. That was the origin of that.
And now you're a pro screen printer.
Oh yes.
You need no teachers.
I appreciate you coming to my show. Jim was at my Weiss Guy GNR show at Grit and Glory. We're taping right now, Wednesday, October 18th. This is right after that. But I appreciate you coming by to that. That was cool.
It was awesome.
And what I appreciate about you is that you are a real deal full-time artist who's basically cut the ripcord from having a day job.
Yeah.
Which was something you did
very scary
a few months ago.
Yeah, in March. I was doing the commercials, just kind of directing commercials, doing concept art and stuff like that. And it was the best job ever. And it's paying well. And... you know, I was trying to do that and trying to balance art at the same time, and it was just getting so overwhelming.
Right.
I was doing it, but I was like, you know what? I'm struggling at work. You know, if I'm going to struggle and sleep at my office for something that's not mine, I could do the same thing at home, you know, for something that is mine. Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, cut ties for a bit.
Right, and that was a scary moment, I'm sure. I'm sure there's a lot of fear with that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm still scared. It's a constant thing, but not as much. Like, the first month was crazy. I was eating Campbell's soup, you know, fearing for my life. Like, how am I going to survive? But somehow or another, you just kind of... You survive.
Right, because I mean, so I guess that gets to the point, like, there really is only so much art in you, right? Like, if you're laying it all on the line, you've got a job in New York that's important, you're expected to pump out high-quality work, that's necessarily going to diminish your output at home. I mean, you only have so much energy,
so
many hours
in
a day.
Exactly, yeah, but, I mean, it's one of those things, the body in motion stays in motion, so while I was doing this, I was, you know, working on the trains. I had a two-hour commute into the city, working, you know, strictly within those 2 hours. I get back home, I stay up till like 2 o'clock in the morning just sculpting, and then I wake up at 6 and kind of do the same thing every day.
Right.
So now it's like, okay, now I'm my own boss. I can wake up whenever, really. I wake up same time anyway.
Yeah. You know, at 6 a.m. I'm impressed.
Maybe 7.
Seven.
But,
right? Yeah. No, it is true. Body motion, God, that's such a great point. Because, like, just when I was crunching for the art show, I have never been more diligent with my time. I'm going to go there for 2 hours. I'm going to do this. I got this half hour slot. It's true. It's like they always say in high school or something. You know, like the kids who do sports get better grades because they got to manage their time better or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, the
activities,
it doesn't have to be sports, but whatever.
And then they carry that on through their life and become crazy people.
Right, right. And then eventually it catches up with them and they're just nuts.
Yeah.
So, and then the fascinating thing was, like, when I followed you back on Instagram probably 3-4 years ago, whatever, you know, you're like a normal person on Instagram, had, you know, how I think, like, everybody, if you don't have some platform that would make people want to follow you, everyone's Instagram stats are follows 889 people and has 901 followers. Like, it's very even, you know. But then all of a sudden you posted this video of the making of Scarecrow, and this thing, like, went viral and spread all over the world. Next thing you know, I'm like, you have like 35,000 followers. I'm like, and it was just fascinating for me because I totally felt like I got in on the ground floor of watching that whole thing happen, and I was proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's wild. Like, I don't understand, you know, how that works, but it's kind of a snowball effect. Like, one page will share something, and then, you know, all the other big pages see it, they share, and then it just kind of keeps going.
It's like, honestly, like, the web reporting is very lazy in a way. Like, they see something, and then, like, they push three words around, and they fake rewrite the story, you know, to be like...
Exactly.
Jim McKenzie from Brooklyn, and the next one will be Brooklyn's Jim McKenzie. You know, it's just, like, a little bit different, but then they push the link, and then once it gets out there, it just blows up.
So,
like,
yeah.
Was that something you posted on... Was that a YouTube clip, or, like, you know, were you able to track the views and watch all of that?
I was at a point, and now it's... I mean, it was through YouTube, through Instagram, through Facebook, all these crazy platforms, and, like... It just kind of took on a life of its own where it's untrackable now. I lost track. It was like maybe like 90 million views throughout.
Oh, my God. Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah,
jeez.
It was
wild. That's like Super Bowl viewing numbers.
And, and you don't really even get, you know, the monetization on that on YouTube is very little.
Like what is it? What, I mean, is this like a couple thousand bucks or something stupid?
Oh, not even. Like, I think I get like 200 a month for
that. At the peak of this thing churning out.
Yeah, that's how much YouTube gives you, you know.
When you compare, like, the numbers of stuff like that to, like, what a cable news show gets, it's like the cable news show gets so much less, you know? Like, they can be cable news shows. Gangnam Style compared to, like, right, a 3 p.m. cable news show that's getting, like, 20,000 viewers. It's really crazy. So did how many... Like, I think we all live in this constant pursuit of viral. We don't even know why we're pursuing it. You clearly had an end to it, which was, you know, to further your art career, was... reaching that viral nirvana, like, was the payoff what you had hoped it would be? Did it help you in a big way? And
I think, yeah, I mean, I just wanted people to kind of understand the process of it and kind of be able to take what they've seen and then apply it to their own skills, whether it's sculpting or whatever, just to know that things take a long time to really, you know, finish. And it definitely, you know, it felt great because so many people write me every day saying, like, you know, they're inspired and stuff.
Yeah.
They want to start sculpting. And that's, you know, that's all I could ask for, you know. And I've kind of gotten it. And now it's like, okay, what next? So
that, I mean, that is cool because that, like, one of the things I do, like, I'll strap a GoPro on the roof. And the thing I like about it, since we are in this digital Instagram era where everything is like a Photoshop picture of nothing and da-da-da, it's like when you can demonstrate that art is a real thing that takes time and has value, I think that's so important. You know, like, look at, people are like, oh, how long did it take to do it? It took me a long time to do it. It was, I don't call it work, but it was a lot of hours. It was a lot of, you know, moving these screens around and that sort of thing. It's good for people to see that.
It definitely is. And I think the, it's not how it is in, you know, the old days, I would say, but, like, you kind of break it off, like now where we have Instagram and stuff like that, you're expected to see viral videos like it's nothing. You're expected to see amazing videos, you know, like, wow, somebody sculpted this massive castle out of sand. Like, and then you just move on to the next. Back in the day, like, you didn't have this infinite content.
Yep.
So when you had something special or, you know, a process video, it was really, you know, something like you hold on to. Now it's just
it's built one in after the process. Another. Now you have to do it.
So it's kind of the competition or it kind of whittles it down. So it's not as important. But I mean, people still appreciate the video.
Right.
So.
Everything loses its impact as like more people do it. And then it's on to the next thing. And I don't even know how we keep speeding up life. Like, I really don't know how we maintain this pace. It's going to be incredible. But so you did the video and like how much. And I do think, like, the thing I really sort of, like, appreciated about that Scarecrow video, which we can link to or whatever, but it's called The Scarecrow, Jim McKenzie. Like, it'll be the first thing that pops up because it's got 90 million views. It was really well done. I mean, this rack focus is just from, like, a camera geek. I'm like, this is insanely well shot. How much longer did that add to your creative process documenting the creation?
That it does actually add a little bit extra to it. I bought a camera. This is all the money I had. I was like, okay, I'm going to buy this Blackmagic camera. I had $4,000 at the time saved up, and I got this fancy camera. I'm sitting there trying to figure out, you know, how to rack focus and paint at the same exact time.
Well, because we were just looking at, because like Matt knows his stuff about photography. I appreciate good photography. Not that I would know how to do it as much, but like, right, there was complex shots going on here, and I could tell you were probably doing it by yourself.
Yeah. There's one kind of... this track shot where like I had it a line of scarecrow heads and I'm trying to sit there and like work and time it out, like be an actor and also film it. So I had it on a skateboard and I'm just kind of like moving it.
So that was your dolly, a skateboard?
Yeah, just like duct taped it through a skateboard and stuff. And everyone thinks I have like some crazy film crew or like a studio behind me editing it, but it's all just, you know, I'm editing it as I'm filming it.
Yeah.
And then the time of the show happens, I do have a film crew
like that.
At the
like, you mean like that day's work you would then like download in, edit that, and so you sort of go. That's how I do mine
together.
Too. I don't let things stack. I'm actually excited to edit it too. I love watching
it's
it and editing it. Like, to me, that's as artistic as the art. You know,
I saw your process video at Grit and Glory. I walked in and I was wondering because I don't know much about screen printing, and I'm like sitting there trying to like analyze, like, how did he do this? And my friend's like, yo, there's a process video right over there. I was like, oh, okay. Perfect. So it's good to, like, you know, it answers questions. You don't have to.
Totally. And I just feel it's weird. Like, now that we're in a digital age, I feel like people always feel like with art, like, oh, this, you're cheating me somehow. Because I think, like, the digital making everyone a photographer. So then that ruined photography. No one wants to pay anything for photographs. Well, I could take that photo. Like, that has a corrosive effect on the whole process. So the more you can display, like, no, you probably couldn't do this.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to learn how to do this.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's great when you could demonstrate, no, you're right, you couldn't do that.
Uh-huh.
You could learn how to do it, but you couldn't just walk out the street and do it. You know, like, I think that's a good thing to remind people.
Yeah. I mean, I went to school for film and not sculpture, so this is just kind of like...
Oh, okay.
That was my main thing, and somehow I got stuck into sculpting. I actually got forced into it maybe like 4 years ago. Someone was like, oh, I'll be in my show, and I just agreed to it. And I was like, yeah, sure, and I had no clue what I was doing. I could just... ask people, like, you know, what kind of clay do you use? And they told me, and I just kind of figured it out.
There's so much that, like, natural curiosity, I think, will lead you to good places. Like, you know, it's like...
I didn't see this happening at all.
Yeah. So where do you go to film school?
SVA, School of Visual Arts.
Oh, okay, sure. And we did this talk, like, you're from Brooklyn, and now you live in Jersey, or vice versa, I forget. Tell me that
again. I'm always hopping back and forth. I was born in Brooklyn. I was raised in Jersey. I moved to Brooklyn. Now I'm in Jersey, and now I'm going to go to California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And can you give me the Brooklyn thing, because like it's so true. Like, you just became like so over Brooklyn because it's not cheap. You're paying so much for this thing that's still. It's like I agree with you. You know, like it's not. Honestly, if you're gonna play the same to live in Manhattan or Brooklyn, just live in Manhattan because it's closer. I mean, unless you're specifically looking for this like girls' lifestyle on HBO, like
that's what it is. You go to the bars; they're all out there.
Yeah.
Being fancy hipsters, and it's half hipsters, half, like, you know, not a great neighborhood. Like, there's abandoned buildings all around my ex-department.
Yeah.
And, you know, now they're starting to revamp them and stuff, but, like, the place is abandoned. And it's just crazy that you're paying, like,
I think what do you say, Red Hook or Greenpoint? Or
Bushwick, but, like, towards, like, the end, you know?
Yeah.
Like, further out there, and I think it was, like, $2,400 a month for like the small space. I don't leave the house. I'm sitting there trying to sculpt, and I have a tiny bed, a little desk, and I'm like, I could have a tiny bed and a little desk anywhere. You know, right. Why am I paying in here? Because I was living in Brooklyn so I could commute to work in animation. And I quit.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, this is silly. So I'm getting the hell out of here.
Right. There must be like so many people like inherited some building that was like, they like, I can't believe I can charge this rent.
There's always a catch at all these people. It's always their parents paying or something silly.
Right. You know? Right. And that makes it harder too. Because, you know, I was reading like Chris Stein, who's like in Blondie, and he's an amazing photographer. And he's got a really cool Instagram account. And he was talking about how, you know, like, you know, back when they lived on the Bowery, when it was like super sketchy.
Uh-huh.
But he's like, I hate modern New York because it's so expensive, right? So it's either only trust funders or like you actually need to have a real job. So there's never time to do art.
Yeah.
Living in this, like, there needs to be cheap, crappy places to live.
There it
does, to have art, or it just dies and becomes, you know,
Europe. You go
stale.
To France, that's all there. Like, you can't do that here. It's, you got to go to, northern New York. Upstate New York,
yeah.
To do that stuff, it's super cheap down there,
right?
But then you lose like
the community and even the inspiration. I mean, it is inspiring to be in the city, but
yeah,
right. It is crazy when you're still paying fancy rents for places that aren't.
No, screw that.
Right, still nerve wracking to get to at 2 a.m. or whenever you're coming and going.
You're working to live, you know, like or you're living to work, actually.
Right.
So,
or right, both like right. It's just like you're chasing your tail around. And you never have the time to create. So, like, I mean, do you ever? You're creating around the clock. I mean, do you ever have to take mental health days? Do you give yourself a day off a week, 2 days a week? Does it fluctuate?
Oh, I should. I wish I could though. Like, I was up all night finishing a piece. I was working 3 weeks straight. See, I can't even speak. I was up to like 2, trying not to take pictures of this piece. My camera breaks. And then it's 3 o'clock. I'm looking for screwdrivers to unscrew the lens and trying to fix it.
And you said what was a black box camera?
Black Magic.
Is that the one like we can change the focal point? Or, I don't know what that is.
It's just a really good 4K camera.
Okay.
There's different lenses and stuff.
Yeah.
But that one actually broke a while ago. So now I'm using this kind of bogus $1,000 Sony handheld thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it does the job, but...
Right. I mean, the quality of all that stuff's come so far. It's crazy.
Yeah. You don't need much now.
And then what do you edit them on?
Just After Effects.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to do, like, Premiere and stuff like that, but...
I see. This is the stuff I need to learn. I don't even
Premiere
know what...
Premiere is strictly, like, videos and stuff.
Yeah.
You can do, like, positions and things like that, but...
Yeah.
I was so comfortable with After Effects. I was, you know, doing motion graphics for commercials and stuff. That I just do everything there. I think you have more accessibilities. You could throw effects in there and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a great program.
And you know how much? So like, you know, you came to my show, which was awesome because you knew Mark. Like you have to meet a ton of people because you knew Mark who
he didn't
worked
even remember
with David. Well, no. Here's the thing though. Mark's memory is no good.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Never take that person. Like he didn't remember Lars's name for like years. Like
yeah. How do you not?
Right. Because he's like a dirt bike accident. He has no memory.
That
like
stinks.
Right. Yeah. It's right. That's not a personal thing.
Sorry,
with him.
Mark.
Yeah. but I mean, so that's the thing. So the only problem is like you do have to be out and about though. Like. Meeting people, trying to, I don't know, line up buyers. Does that get you out of, like, does that put you out of that if you're, you know, not in the city or whatever, or it's a hassle to commute
I
in?
Don't know. I mean,
doesn't seem like you're concerned with that, though.
I'm not really trying to line up buyers, but I do love going to, like, art shows because, like I said before, like, I like to, like, inspect the art and, like, kind of, like, take on this, like, a Columbo approach where, like, I'm really, like, taking it in. Seeing how everything was constructed.
Right.
And then kind of not applying it to myself, but just the knowledge I have from that. I could take it and, you know, use it with my own things, I guess. But so I will be working all the time. And then when I'm not, I will go to a show.
Yeah.
But it has to be like, you know, I can't go to every show.
Right.
And there are times where you have to miss your friends' shows and it's, you know.
People know. I think people who are friends, you must know that's your thing, though. Like, listen, he's holed up doing his thing. And
that
your friend is to know that.
Yeah.
You know,
you don't get
creeped out. So you brought me. So, and also one of the things I love about Jimmy's obsessed with his dog, who's also his muse, Gordo, who's great. How old's Gordo?
He's nine. I think. Actually, someone gave him to me like 7 years ago, and I still have no clue how old he was when he was given to me.
Oh, I gotcha.
He was this fat puggle, and I had a dog my whole childhood, Sparky, and he died, and I was totally distraught because I don't have brothers or sisters or anything.
Oh, my God, I'm an only child. Oh, God, that's a weird thing. Like,
you're an only child?
Okay. And so... And I grew up, I mean, God, I didn't have cable till I was in eighth grade. I mean, I grew up in the middle of nowhere. So it's like, I would I was literally like, I was this weird mix of like drawing Legos, and then I swear to God, like my basketball dedication was like Larry Bird. Like wow. it would snow, I would shovel my driveway, I would play until my hands numbed out, and then I play some more listening to like rock radio. Yeah. You know, like I remember like listening to like Alice in Chains, like Man in a Box era. You know, just shooting like 10,000 hoops.
The cassette,
right? No, it was like a FM radio in my dad's garage, you know, coming through, like, so the neighbors would hear me. But the great thing was, actually, my varsity basketball coach was my neighbor. Uh-huh. I'm like, this guy must know, like, I'm practicing my ass off. Like, all I do is shoot hoops. He's hearing me do free throws in a snowstorm.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's good. So only child, though, right? Like, you have to entertain yourself. These outlets, yeah. I think, lend itself
and
to
this
that.
This was definitely the one for me. I was trying to do the music thing. I wanted to go to school for, like, being a composer. And,
yeah.
You know, I think this kind of took over.
When? Like how old?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you always, when you're an artist, you just start from the beginning. There's never like a kind of starting point.
Sure, right.
But, you know, there was different steps. So like at one point I wanted to be the best Photoshop artist. I wrote myself a note when I was like 18. I was like, you know what? When I'm 25, I'm going to be the best Photoshop artist in town.
Yeah.
And that's my goal. And then, you know, I became 22 and I wanted to be the best VFX artist. I wanted to be the best motionographer person, whatever. I wanted to be a director. And it just changed, like, you know, year by year. Then I wanted to do paintings because of that guy Benegas, mm-hmm. our mutual friend.
Yeah.
And then that kind of stirred me into this weird, you know, I got to see what the art world was about.
Yeah.
And I just loved, like, everyone coming to the galleries.
Yeah.
And looking at the stuff. And right. It was something you can't get working in a commercial industry. Like,
right.
You don't get that instant.
There is those glamorous moments that, like, everyone's going, oh, my God, it's incredible. You know, right. Yeah.
Your friends are coming out. And, like, you get to see them actually appreciating your work. And
right.
It's something I wasn't getting through commercials. But as a kid, you know, I went to SVA, people come into SVA to talk, and they're like, you know, I did this commercial for the Super Bowl, and I remember being like, wow, yeah, that's amazing. This guy did something that, like, millions of people saw on the you know, the Super Bowl. And then I lived through that. I got to that point, and, you know, it was cool. But, like, it's not 100% yours.
That's almost like, well, that's like TV, too. Like, you don't know that they're watching it, though. Like, theoretically, someone could tell you, like, someone tell me, this many people watch a newscast book. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no concept of it, you know? Like, right. So then that can be unsatisfying in a way. So then, like, so you make your money now. Like, you do a lot of these, like, limited edition of your sculptures you then get made. Like, what's that process like? You know, like, how does that work? They scan them and then they, like...
It's got to be totally rebuilt in like a smaller form, either mm-hmm. by hand or 3D printing. So I'll do a sculpture, I'll make a video of it, and if it's a, you know, a popular one or something I really like, I will get a 3D artist who will resculpt it in 3D because I'll take, you know, turntables and photos of it, and we'll make sure it's just right. We'll print it out, and we'll run it through either Toy Cube, who is a toy manufacturing company, or 3D Retro. So this one, the King Gordo, that was my first one, and it actually took about 3 years to come to a completion. Like, the ones through Toy Cube were very, you know,
oh, wow,
speedy.
Geez. Like, on their end, it was just, like, taking forever?
Yeah,
I mean, and you have to decide, too, because you must have sunk cost in these until you sell them, so, like, you got to feel really confident, I'm guessing, right?
It's a, like, weird thing. Like, I'll design the box. Every time there's a box, I'm, like, on a plane or something, like, just on my Wacom tablet, making sure the box looks good. And, you know, so I'm doing everything pretty much besides the actual manufacturing.
Sure.
And when it comes down to the inventory and how people get paid through this, I'm not really putting any money up front. So it's these companies that spend the money.
Okay.
Then they don't pay me. They that sounds fucked up.
Right.
They give me 10% of the inventory to sell on my own site. So if we make 200 Scarecrow dolls, they'll give me 20 Scarecrow dolls. And they say, you could sell these.
And how do they sell them? Like, they
sell the rest on their site.
On their okay, yeah. So they've like got their own followers.
Yeah.
So that's where the social media. See, the thing is, I'm just watching, like, you talk about, like, I want to be the best visual artist and the Photoshop. The great thing about the web, like, all of this does, none of it's for naught. Like, now it's all becoming one thing where, like, you can use all those skills.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, your video skills were how people learned about the Scarecrow, which was something you were sculpting, and then you get a following, right? And then you can hopefully sell to your followers, and you develop a fan base.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's it all kind of forms itself. So you have like characters, films of them, toys, and it's just own world that kind of takes over itself. But I think the goal is to just kind of keep making different characters. And what I do is I always keep them very vague. I don't really give a backstory. Everyone wants to know, like, what's the backstory of the Scarecrow? Is he you? Or, you know,
oh,
is
yeah,
he a
yeah.
real boy?
Right, right.
And you never tell them what it is, because I think it's kind of like a book. You know, you want people to put their own interpretation
sure.
into it.
And people love that. Like, yeah. I remember I did one thing. Like, they asked me to come to the Screen Printing Studio just because, like, they're having, like, I don't know, donors or something come in. And I had to roll out three. And, like, it was this one thing I did. And it had, like, Garbage Pail Kids on it or something. It was just, like, learning a screen print, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, like, whatever. But
when,
like,
was this?
What was that?
When was this?
Like 5 months, you know, like, okay. Sometime in the past year. But it was like, hey, come by and just show us your process, whatever. We've got people coming through. And it was funny because, like, a lot of my stuff, I'm so literal. Like, it was just like, I would just do big wax packs of, like, you know, like a Three's Company wax pack from 1978. I would just make it like 6 feet by 6 feet, mm-hmm. like exact. But this one was more sort of, you know, what's the word? Open to interpretation or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, but everyone had their own, like, they loved telling me what they were seeing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's important. You know, like,
uh-huh.
if you have the element of mystery, people then love importing their meaning into it.
Same with films, books. You yep. have a character.
Yeah.
You always want that character to be relatable, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's a villain, hero, or anything. You always want to have the viewer to kind of put themselves into the piece.
Right.
So I think you got to keep that the same with music, you know, film, art, anything you're doing.
Yeah.
It's very important. But I do have stories for all these characters. It just, you know,
the less you share, the better.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So what's I guess we're probably wrapping up now. Like, what? Where do we go from here? What's next for you?
Oh, I don't know.
You don't have to answer that. That's like a lame opener. Yeah, what are you picture yourself in 5 years? But I mean, you're continuing to do your art,
movies,
and
yeah.
you know, you're moving to California. So what's the impetus behind moving to California?
I'm going to do a solo show in Australia. So a solo show is you have the entire gallery for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much like an album. I always equate art to albums, like music.
Yeah.
So this is going to be my second album, essentially.
Okay. Did you do that thing at Copro?
Yeah,
is
yeah.
am I saying that right in California?
I think it's Copro
or whatever.
It's one of them. I still don't
yeah.
know.
But how is that so exciting? Like, you went out to California
yeah,
within
yeah,
the past year
there.
Or so. And
yeah, and that was awesome. So mm-hmm. now the next one's going to be in Australia. I think I'm just going to work on the show down there and head out there to Australia, maybe do some talks, signings, and who knows.
It's cool having fans, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's great.
It's wild. It's kind of like you know, you're playing to a crowd almost.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a good interaction for both, you know.
Right.
Same with musicians. They're playing. If the crowd is dull, your music's dull. If they're roaring,
right,
up,
it's like when
know?
They always do like Nirvana, and they're like, oh, like then the jocks started showing up at our show, and like
uh-huh.
they were confused by their success by who they were seeing in the crowd.
Yeah.
Right, like, you don't want the wrong crowd.
Exactly.
Or brings you out of it.
And it's
you
a
know?
Weird like, analogy, but like, yeah.
Yeah.
The followers, the weird people interacting. It's like,
yeah. You want them on your level.
Yeah. It's a give and take, because they appreciate it. You appreciate it. And there's definitely a need for an audience. A lot of artists will like bullshit and say, you know, I don't need no fucking audience.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is all about me, you know, whatever. Which is true. You don't need an audience.
Yeah.
The art is supposed to be for you. And I think when you start off, you playing to people, and then you kind of hone yourself, you find out what you want. What would you make if no one was watching? And that's the stuff you make. But you also do know that you are playing to people.
Right.
You know, Instagram is this platform that is kind of taken up, you know, the job of a gallery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't need to go to galleries anymore to have them sell their work. You can
right.
sell their work.
And that's a good thing overall, right? Or what do you
so.
Think about that?
It's,
yeah.
It's good. It's bad. But so is everything. You know, like, this is
right.
technology. And
yeah.
Like, you can't be bitter about it. You know, there's a lot of older artists that are like, you know what, you're ruining the galleries, this Instagram, you know, everyone's selling their own stuff. Sure, you know?
Right.
Accept it.
Well, because, and that's even, like, I feel like even restaurants, like, 5 years ago, it was cool to be like, this is BS, I don't want anyone taking photos of my food, but now they've come
now
around
you
and
need
realize,
to.
Like,
yeah.
you
gotta
just
play
get
the
on
game.
Board or, like,
exactly.
die, you know, honestly. All right, so this is, like, the litmus test of our time. Where are you on the whole Trump phenomena?
Oh, man. I don't even want to... you know, utter his name. But
yeah.
I mean, I think everyone in the right mindset is in the right place with this.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Like, so you don't run into many people with counter opinions on that, right?
I
like
actually do in Jersey.
Okay.
And I didn't know that a lot of people in my circle are for this person.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, you're kind of alienated in that sense. But this is ridiculous. There's no other word for it. There's so many things happening right now. All we could talk about is the NFL. Like, you've got Mexico. I mean, Puerto Rico.
Right.
This is us. This is our territory.
Right.
No
right.
one's helping them. They are sending people. So
mm-hmm.
on paper, yeah, sure, we are helping them, but we're not doing the job.
You feel like it's
doing.
Not getting the attention
no.
that it should be.
It should be getting the same attention as Texas or
yeah.
something that is close to us.
Yeah.
We could focus on whether or not Trump is a bad guy or not, but I think what we really should be doing is helping these people and sending links. It's up to the people now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen up there, so... there's so many sites.
Isn't it weird how like almost some functions of government have been outsourced, like it's plugging a podcast in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you donate to this. Send
yeah.
this link out. You know, it's like
yeah,
now
yeah.
we're just in an era where everything's promotion.
Yeah.
You know,
really
I don't know. It's weird.
It's promotion, but it's just a way to get a message through,
yeah.
you know, way to make change. And it's the only way things happen these days, you know.
Right. I think that's the weird thing, though, that it's the only
it's
way
totally
things
weird.
Happen. You know, it's like by vote or something.
It's just getting weirder
you know?
And weirder.
Yeah.
This is technology, man.
Yeah.
We've got the phones with, that look at our faces now, and we've got the thumbprint thing.
And I don't like going to the face print either. Like, I don't yeah. know. Now I think, like, a thumbprint's, like, old school.
The thumbprint's old school, but...
I like the thumbprint. Now the face yeah. print, I'm, like, I'm cautious
it's
of it.
It's weird. They're watching you, and they're saving these photos. I don't know. Maybe they're not. But.
No, I know. They are. I know. Like, how is there that much memory? But, like, they are.
Yeah.
They're not, like, they're not just picking who to save. They're saving all of them.
Mm.
Maybe they'll never come back to you, but, like, they're being saved somewhere.
And we're doing it willingly.
Yeah. I know. No one cares.
Yeah.
You can't care because it would drive you insane, but like you should care. I don't know, they've got us over the barrel. Like
yeah,
the
we
thing,
did it to ourselves.
I think like the degradation of email. Like who would have ever thought, literally 5 years ago, that like email, there were no rules governing it. They were searching your emails to send you. I don't know. We decided what we wanted the rules of engagement to be, and they just weren't that when mm-hmm. we didn't understand.
Yeah.
Like, I remember being like, why is email free? I don't get how they make money on it. Because, like, that whole business model it didn't even exist. This idea of, like, just get all the information about someone and then sell it stuff back to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was
it's
like,
good,
I don't get
it's
it.
It's bad, but, I mean, sometimes, like, you know, they'll know, they.
Mm-hmm.
They'll know what music I'm into. So they'll be like, oh, you know, Jim, there's a Black Keys concert coming your way. Here's, buy the ticket right now. And I'm like, oh, how did you know? But you know what? I will buy this ticket.
Right.
So there's opportunities there. But it's also so sick because we're willingly posting what we had for breakfast today.
No,
like
right.
everyone knows these things. Like,
and it all has a value attached to it, which is weird too, no matter how minute it is. Like,
yeah.
We're just all consuming all the time. It's the music thing you said is so interesting because I remember I tweeted this out like a while ago. Oh, it was when I was going to Dead & Co. I remember this. I was going to Dead & Co. I was on the west side. I was coming from my art studio. And, like, I had Spotify make me some playlist or suggest something. I'm like, how do they always know to send me the right thing right when I want it? And then I'm like, oh, because they know every piece of music
know.
I've listened. Like, they know everything yeah. I've listened to for 5 years. That's how.
There's
no mystery to it.
Yeah.
It's not like
right
having
now,
DJ know what to do for me. Like,
yeah.
they know.
They know what songs you want to hear, but, like, next they're going to, like, know where you want to go.
Right.
Who you want to hang out with. They're going to curate your friends.
Who they want you to hang
yeah.
out with. You
who
know?
You should talk to
yeah.
whatever you want to do. And like all these other crazy things that we can't even think of right now. We think this is weird. Oh, you know what I'm eating today. But we don't even know yet. Like it's going to get... These things are literally... We have a computer attached to us at all time. And we
I
don't
know.
Think it's... But it's on our legs.
It's
and
not
it's
benevolent.
Not
you know,
yeah.
it's not necessarily malignant, but it's not just there for our pleasure. Like...
Yeah.
Although we think it is most
because we can leave our phones at home. But if you did, imagine that, how crazy you'd feel.
When we were driving to the show, Mark and I the other day, I'm like, Mark, dude, you got to get your charger for the car. We're stuck in traffic. I'm dying. And I mean, I was dying because I was at like 90% and I have the charger. So I like if I have less, I leave my house at 200% battery.
Mm.
And he's like, I don't even. How do you even get 200% battery? He's like, give me the charger. I've got 7%, and I'm like, if
oh
I was at 7%, I would be
sweating
like file footage of a junkie in the Bronx
yeah.
in 1970. And I'm like, 7%, I'm gonna die. I don't know what to do. Like,
same.
And that's like a bad thing, right? Like, I could never go out. I would not be. There's, you know, when you go on vacation, they're like, oh, it's relaxing. We've got terrible cell phone service. Like, that's the opposite of relaxing to me.
Mm.
Like, I still like just being on my phone. Doesn't mean like. To check work emails or whatever,
yeah,
but
no.
I don't like not having the option to like.
I've done it not by choice. My phone fell. I was running to the train trying to get home. Fell in a crazy thunderstorm, completely broke. And I was out for a phone for, I think, about like 2 days. And at first, I was freaking out. And then it was a complete relief, you know? I wasn't glued to
You had to
anything.
Go through withdrawals, basically.
Yeah, I did. It was intense. And then I was like, wait a minute. You know, I don't have to talk to anybody. I don't have to post things.
Yeah.
Or, like, I'd check emails. Like, and it was great. And then I got a phone, and I was back in the Matrix.
Right. Yeah, God, it is like that. It is like that. So you've got a lot going on, I mean, with the art, which is great. Give us your next show, because I know you have one right around the corner.
Yeah. This week, I got one coming up on Saturday, October 28th. At the Last Rites Gallery. It's in the city, I think 23rd or 33rd, something like that. And the show is called The Last Hour. No, it's not called The Last Hour. It's called The 13th Hour. And it's a group show, a lot of great artists. And I got this new piece that I've been working on for 3 weeks straight.
Which you lugged here, and you're dropping off there.
Yes, I just finished it last night. It's in the studio right here, and it's due today. So I'm going to run over there, drop it off, and go start my next piece tonight. So I got that show. I got another
You start
show.
The next piece tonight. Like, you're right into the next
There's
thing.
Another piece is due in 2 days.
Do you, and I will wrap up soon, but do you find yourself like, I don't like anything I've done more than like two or three pieces ago. Then I start thinking all the previous stuff is crap.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's weird. And then I'll look at it. I'm like, okay, it's all right. Usually, hopefully.
But that's a great thing.
Right. But it's always the thing right now
is all I care
about.
Because then you kind of, it's motivation to keep going. You know, you're always gonna like the piece that you're working on now. And then, you know, that it leaves, it goes to college, you never talk to it again.
Yeah.
Somebody buys it. And, you know, you evolve as an artist. You make better work and truer work, I think, and you appreciate that more. You look back and you say, what the hell was I doing? You know, I don't like any of the stuff I've really done up until like this year.
My wife always gets on me. She's like, oh God, you do all this stuff and then you hate it like once you're done with it.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
But that's, you know, actors do that too. They look at their old movies, they go, this is shit.
It is. There are some similarities between the whole creative process. Right? People probably hate their first album unless it was, you know, Appetite for Destruction.
But you love all your Guns N' Roses pieces.
I love my Guns N' Roses pieces so much. Although the first Slash, I could have technically done better, but it's like, right. But that's the thing, it drives you crazy. You know, you look at it and it's like, oh yeah.
You got to let it go.
Right. You do have to let it go. But I do like the ones I did the last more than the beginning. It's crazy, the whole thing. All right. Two crazy only children rambling here. We're going to wrap it at this point. Jim McKenzie, I appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, man. This was awesome.
What a good time.
Woo!
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. This episode was recorded, edited, and mixed by Matt Onimus. Our executive producers are me, Matt, and Ahmad Asghar. Our vice president of news is Byron Harmon, and our vice president and general manager is Lou Leone. Binge Talking is part of the Fox 5 Podcast Network. I'm Steve Lacy, and if you have any questions or comments, feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Stephen Lacy with a V. Or on Instagram, Steve Lacy, Stevelacy. In the meantime, stay tuned for our next episode.